Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Nobody thinks he's going to be back, you know, in time for the start of next season. I have not heard anybody say credibly he will play next season. They have only said that he's going to be out a certain number of months, but nobody has said after that certain number of months that he jumps right back in. I mean,
apparently it was a projected 6 to 8 month recovery time before the infection. So you don't know how much that's delayed it.
Yeah, so
I'm never playing football again. Now, I'm not a doctor. Well, I'm not that kind of doctor.
You are a doctor.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
We are live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest. We are open for breakfast when we do this show. We will do this show Thursday and Friday this week, so you can come in tomorrow and the day after if you would like. Gene McManus is here. Gary Braun is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel will run the board, do the news. Let me thank a couple of people for stuff. I received a very lovely little note the other day from Katie Watson, whose dad, Steve, is a member at Columbia and a guy I like very, very much. And within 24 hours of him listening to this podcast and hearing that I had slipped on black ice and ultimately find out that I have broken a rib, he slipped on the ice and broke two ribs.
Oh,
and I didn't know he was here, but he was apparently here yesterday. And Katie wrote, "My dad told me you hurt your ribs too. Ouch. I really hope you feel better." I would say thank you to Katie, in which a person is a Band-Aid.
Yeah, it's a Band-Aid with lots of...
It's very nice.
A Band-Aid.
I would just
very
say lovely. This. Last night into this morning was the toughest I've had in a week, and I don't know why. I mean, I was up 6-7 times in the middle of the night in pain on my left side, and it seemed to have spread from my actual back to my side now. Oof. I have no idea what this is. My theory is that I was not taking enough drugs to mask the pain, because yesterday I took two Advils and one Tylenol with codeine, because I don't think you want to keep taking Tylenol with codeine and develop a dependency.
End up like Brett Favre.
But maybe I needed a little bit more. I took an Advil early this morning, and it hurts. It's painful.
Do you have a chair that's a recliner?
I do not.
See,
I have one out at the beach, but I'm not out
David
at the beach.
David fractured ribs very often falling off.
Well, mules. Animals, he fell off animals.
But that was the way.
Sleep
the
in the
only
recliner?
The way he could sleep was like flat on his back in a recliner and then could sort of eject himself out so he didn't have to pull himself up out
this
of
is
bed.
The hardest thing is when I am lying down and I tend...
Crunching
now, when I sleep, this is maybe too much information for people.
No, please. People have been asking.
If you look at a bed... You're standing at the foot of the bed. I only sleep on what is on the left side of the bed as you look down on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I only sleep facing out.
Stage right.
Only sleep facing out. Don't confuse me. I only sleep facing to the outside there. Well, I can't sleep on my side. So now I am sleeping on my back. And to get out of the bed.
Killed you.
I have to take my left leg. I have to take my right leg. Turn it, get out of the bed, move my left leg as close to my right leg as possible so that pushing up isn't as hard as it would normally be. It's look, I'm not going to die from this. I don't think so. But this is really uncomfortable. And there's nothing that can...
There's nothing can be done.
Well, can't you, just temporarily rent one of those chairs, a recliner, like call the medical supply company.
Install one of those things on your staircase.
I don't know.
Call up the rent-a-center.
I'm sure you can.
Yeah, the Mrs. Soprano chair.
Yeah.
You know, up and down
the
staircase.
I don't know. So it's painful.
I have a friend, by the way, a younger man than you. So you would call a kid.
When I wore a younger man's clothes.
Just turned 49. Last Wednesday, I think the same day as you, shoveling, slipped.
Oh, no.
Immediately thought he had dislocated his shoulder. Turns out he tore his rotator cuff, just ripped it right off, had surgery just 2 days ago.
That's a long one.
Yeah, so he's out for the whole next year.
I mean, I'm supposedly out 3 to 4 weeks. I don't know. Also got a very nice note from Columbia University, from Peter Piling, I'm not sure who's the SID at Columbia University. And I bring this up because at the back...
The Lions, am I right?
They are the Lions. What it says, the way... This is interesting. If you remember, do you remember when Wilbon and I talked about what Northwestern was doing? All the bus ads in Northwestern in Chicago, they say Northwestern, the Big Ten Chicago school. Because they wanted to make sure that Illinois, also in the Big Ten, didn't try to preempt Chicago for recruiting purposes. So they tied themselves to Chicago. Columbia now refers to themselves as Columbia University in the city of New York. That's smart.
Yeah.
Sure.
That, when I was in high school, and Gene and I were in high school at the same time, Columbia, you got into Columbia. That was really an achievement.
It was.
That's always, always rated in the top five schools in America. And they have beautiful colors. They're blue. They had Carolina blue before Carolina had Carolina blue. But they were such a bad athletic school that nobody gave them credit. Anyway, the note, it's a very nice note from Peter Pilling. Since Columbia was the only men's basketball team in the country to play both Northwestern and Binghamton, we thought we'd send you a care package. Love the show and Tony's podcast. Go Wildcats, Bearcats, and Lions. Now, Columbia beat us, did not beat Northwestern. So we got a bunch of stuff. I took one shirt and gave Mike whatever he wanted and gave this out to everybody else. But I wanted to thank him since he listens to the podcast for a box, a big box of that.
You can't wear that shirt.
A Columbia University basketball shirt?
I won't.
Why? I paid the tuition at Penn. Why? Why?
Maybe off air, I'll tell my...
Do you consider Columbia a rival?
I was going to say, I thought Penn was...
Penn more traditionally lines up with Princeton than Princeton does not want to recognize that. It depends on the sport.
It's geography. It's Penn-Princeton.
What I don't like is, and now I have a theory I'll share off air about a cheating scandal.
Oh, no,
Columbia.
I remember that. I remember that.
From the
golf.
2008 Ivy League Championship and a lost ball.
Right.
And I believe the Dartmouth coach can back us up on this.
Yes. Yes.
It's good to carry a grudge, Michael.
Grudges are good.
Where'd you learn that?
Yeah.
But so I had, I know a couple of people that worked at Columbia. Steve and Anita Jacobson, Michael's godparents, their daughter Neela was a trainer at Columbia for many years. And the famous Jimmy Steinman, who I talk about in my high school class.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jimmy's brother Billy was the SID there for 35 years used to send out press releases in which he would use words like lugubrious. I mean, nobody knew what that meant. And Billy Steinman was an SID there, a good friend of mine in high school, Michael Oberman. He got into Columbia and went to Columbia. Columbia, if you want to talk about the social justice movement in America, you look no further than Mark Rudd in the mid to late 1960s and shutting down Columbia.
Taking over the dean's office smoking cigars in his chair.
Was the dean's, was it Grayson Kirk perhaps?
That sounds right.
Grayson Kirk was running Columbia in 1966, 1967, and Columbia was shut down. And Columbia, to be fair, Michael, smart kids. Smart kids.
And a great teacher's college, which has a wonderful private school leadership graduate program.
And a wonderful journalism school.
And that great broadcasting school.
No, that's not. The Columbia School of Broadcasting is different. Oh. Anyway, so let me thank all of them, and let me move into the actual show here.
The actual show.
And let us start with Serena Williams.
By the way,
Williams.
Nice crowd today. And by nice, I don't mean numbers. I just mean they seem like nice people.
They're nice people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a Wednesday. We don't do that much business on a Wednesday morning,
think,
but we're happy to...
I think I'm a show killer. There's no...
No,
never anybody
not by
knows.
No.
Phil is a show killer.
No.
Is it... Can you look up... Who is the president
Grayson
of...
Kirk. Protests of 68.
Gina, got that one.
You did. Yeah.
Got that one. 1968. Mark Rudd, who later became an elementary school teacher in New Mexico. Mark Rudd shut down Columbia University. There had been the most...
63.
Well, no, he shut it. He didn't shut it down in 63.
Oh no, wait, sorry.
The guy, Mario
Savio,
at Berkeley. Mario Savio was the first sort of student power leader to achieve giant status. But Mark Rudd, Mario Savio didn't shut Berkeley down. I don't believe with the free speech movement, but Mark Rudd shut Columbia down. There were no classes at Columbia for a while.
This is about a gym. Is that right?
I don't know.
The construction of a gym,
possibly.
According to,
but it was all about the Vietnam War on some level.
Okay.
It's possible that they were taking funds, you know, from some source that
students were protesting the university's affiliation with the Institute for Defense Analysis and its plans to construct a new gymnasium in Morningside Park.
Well, there you go. I mean, because it had to do with everything had to do with Vietnam.
And he eventually became a member of the Weather Underground. Went underground.
Mark Rudd did.
Yes,
but
I'm
he ended up he ended up as a teacher in New Mexico.
Did. New Mexico Community College.
Information
mathematics
for life.
Nobody even knows who we're talking about.
Right, this is why people listen.
This is 50 years ago. Nobody knows. Yeah, nobody knows.
I'm looking at a picture of the bloke. It's not Mark Rudd. It is somebody else, but sitting at the dean's desk with the sunglasses on and the cigar.
Yeah.
That's what we grew up
I am the captain now.
Yeah, that's what we grew up.
Feet on the desk.
Right, Serena Williams, I'm shocked. She's out. I am shocked, especially after I railed about how it was unfair to Simone Halep to have to play Serena
the number one seed in the Australian Open have to play Serena in the fourth round because Serena was bogusly seeded 16. Serena then plays Carolina Pliskova, or Pliskova, I don't know how it's pronounced.
Pliskova.
She's up 5-1 in the third. She loses. She turns her ankle on her first. She had four or five match points. She turned her ankle on the first one. She did not call a trainer out. She hung tough, maybe because of what she has done recently at the U.S. Open, you know, maybe because of the bad publicity there, where she acted like a prima donna in most people's minds. She hung tough, and she lost. And if you watch footage of it, she's banging it into the net. Shots that are easy shots for Serena Williams. She's throwing them into the net. She lost her final 11 service points. In this particular case, I would have said, you can see the ankle go on replay. Call the trainer. Call the trainer. Maybe she was afraid the trainer would say, get out.
She gave all credit to her opponent, though. She didn't.
She did.
Didn't use his excuse, yeah.
She did. She lost. Well, Pliskova won 6-4, 4-6, 7-5. But Serena, she's cruising. It's 5-1 in the third.
In the press conference afterward, she looked exhausted.
Serena did?
I thought so. I mean, I have never seen her face look so drawn as it did.
Well, it's hard when you're not being illegally coached. Yeah. So,
did you watch?
I actually woke up in the middle of the night to check the cell phone and saw the score. And it was like 5-4 at that point. And just turned it on and watched the remainder of it. It was just stunning. I mean, you think, well, Serena will turn it around now. Oh, well, she get this point. And Pliskova was playing great, but Serena just obviously was off her game at that point and just was...
You can see it. Her ankle caves in.
I had missed that. I had missed that
Her ankle caves in. You go, you can't play. And she continued to play, and she lost. And that's a big deal.
Yeah,
because
5-1.
Now, who's watching that from now on?
And it's too bad she was going to, if she'd won that match, she would have been against Osaka, the winner of the U.S. Open.
And we could have had a
rematch.
Yes.
You know, a replay on that and see how they carried on in that one.
Yeah.
There's an American girl who's still in it I've never heard of.
Danielle Collins, is that her name?
She played 4 years at the University of Virginia. I've never heard of her. She's in the semifinals.
Yeah, she's playing quite well.
Tennis, I know you love tennis.
And
I love tennis. I used to cover tennis.
Yeah, but it's not the same sport.
American tennis, particularly American men's tennis, nobody cares.
No.
It became a worldwide sport. This is the mistake that track and field and tennis have made was leaving the United States, where the greatest concentration of their events were in the United States, to go worldwide. Now, they may make more money. They may do very, very well. But they've left a vacuum here. Nobody actually cares anymore.
Right.
In the United States, people go to the U.S. Open, sure, but tennis is 8, 9, 10. It's way down the list.
Way down.
It's way down the list. I think it may be behind soccer and fan interest now in the United States.
I think for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, anyway. All right, we'll get out of here. When we come back, Richard Justice of MLB.com will join us, and we will talk about the most recent inductees into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Three of whom I'm not sure of, me personally. I don't know. Are they Hall of Famers? But Richie will know. So we'll talk to him when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Brooklinen ad. It says you spend a third of your life in sheets. Well, you know, if David was sleeping on a rocket chair, he was not spending any of his life in sheets.
He was
just being ejected into the middle of the room in the middle of the night. Hit the button,
and
boom.
We should be clear, these are sheets on a bed, not sheets the store.
Right. Well, yes. No, not that. A third of your life in sheets. So if you're looking for a New Year's resolution, better sleep, God, is a good place to start. Yes. New year, new you, new sheets. They want me to talk about the incredible feeling of a 5-star hotel sheet and how it shouldn't be so difficult and expensive to get sheets like that at home. That's true. It shouldn't be so difficult and so expensive to get that. And 5-star hotels are really nice. They're really nice. And want me to talk about the new sheets your friend have been raving about and recommending, Brooklinen. Well, I to be honest, I don't have those conversations. People say, hey, let me tell you about my new sheets.
To be honest, you don't have friends.
I don't even have friends. I don't have
Deeper
friends.
Deeper dive.
But
true.
Brooklinen sheets have been named the winner of the best of online betting category by Good Housekeeping. They've got more than 30,000 5-star reviews. Brooklinen works directly with their manufacturers to pass the savings on to you, making luxury betting without the luxury prices. Finally, you can finally get 5-star hotel quality sheets easily without breaking the bank. Sheets don't just feel amazing, they look great too. You can mix and match over 20 colors and patterns. Sheets are their bread and butter, but they also make towels, robes, let's see about robes, and sleep masks, so you can add a splash of luxury to your daily routine going into 2019. Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I have ever slept on. Now it's time for your upgrade. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer to listeners of this high-quality podcast. You can get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code TonyKShow at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code TonyKShow at Brooklinen.com. And let me spell it out for you. Brooklinen, Brooklinen.com, promo code Tony. They shift, they always shift the promo code to see who's listening and who's buying. They keep track.
Keep you on your toes.
Yeah, they keep track of how many people, and that's what they do. And then they decide, do they want to advertise again? Brooklinen, these really are the best sheets ever.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We get this note from Hal Duranik, who says, this is Hal from Seattle. You have been good enough to play a couple of songs for my band, The Almost Faithful, and the reaction has been fantastic, though not quite enough to book a tour through Europe. We're seeing some good turnout for shows. We've even got one lechizerie at the last show. Wow. Anyhow, if I recall, Tuesdays are normally two for Tuesdays on the pod. I have no idea how that happened.
Not sure.
So I thought I'd send in two more songs from our recently released album, Human Nature. The first song is called I Disappear. The second song, which we will play later, is called, because it's two for Tuesday.
Well, it's two for Wednesday.
Two for Wednesday is Big Blue Dervish. Both are up-tempo rocks full of melancholy ruminations of what could be. Fun stuff. Anyway, so this is The Almost Faithful. You'll hear them, and then you'll hear them at the end of the podcast. Richard Justice of MLB.com
Hi,
joins
Richie.
Us. Jeannie is
Hey,
here.
Jeannie.
So let me get, we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame almost exclusively. Mariano Rivera went in unanimously. Why didn't you vote against him? If I voted, I honestly would have, to keep the tradition. I said this on the show last night. I would have voted. He's getting in. I would have voted against him. Why didn't you?
Listen, the ballots are now made public a week later, and there's a guy named Ryan Thibodeau that he tracks the ballots as they're submitted. You send him your ballot, and there's pressure to do that. I know a bunch of guys that didn't want the ballots made public, and I just think there's a shaming process to it. So, you know, people would say to me, you know Rivera's going to get in. You feel strongly about, let's say, that Lance Berkman should stay on the ballot. He didn't get enough to stay on. Why wouldn't you have a strategic ballot?
Yeah.
No, because the next day you're going to get a call, and this actually happened, from Dick Young when he was alive with the New York Daily News, and it's going to say, I'm going to slice you and dice you into a million pieces tomorrow in my column. This actually happened once. A guy that didn't vote for Mickey Mantle got a call from Dick Young.
Yep.
And you know what he said to the guy? He said, I just don't believe anybody should go in on the first ballot. Dick Young bought it. So there's a shaming process to it. And look, 11 people didn't vote for Babe Ruth. When they were counting the ballots in 1936, they actually stopped the ballot counting and said, what are we doing out here, man?
Come on, man.
So, but I will tell you, and I said this on PTI, I think it's a quaint and honorable tradition. It never kept anybody out, and it always gave you something to talk about. And of
right.
course, Mariano Rivera is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Of course he is, but I'd have taken the bullet on that one just because
No, you don't. I would have. You don't want to be that guy. When you get the call from, say, you know, New York and said, you didn't vote for Tom Seaver. Can you explain that? Well, actually, I can't explain it.
All right. So there's no question that even though this is a relatively new position invented pretty much by Tony La Russa and Dennis Eckersley, that
yes.
Mariano Rivera is the best ever. So he's in, and nobody would argue that. He's the sure thing. Three other people got in yesterday. Edgar Martinez, a designated hitter. If it was up to me, I think I would have had David Ortiz as the first designated hitter I put in, Mike Mussina and Roy Halladay. And I'm not sure, Richie, I don't know who you voted for. I'm not sure that any of them, again, and I say this a lot, it's not the Hall of the Very Good. It's not. It's the greatest players of all time. Harold Baines, he's the Tracy McGrady of the Hall of Fame in this sport now. I mean, Tracy McGrady should not be in the Hall of Fame in basketball. He should not.
Right.
And Harold Baines shouldn't be. Did you vote or do you justify Martinez, Messina, and Halliday?
I'm a big Hall guy. I voted for 10 for the last several years. I've always thought that Messina and Schilling were slam dunks. Jason Stark wrote a couple of years ago that if we're going to have closers in the game, if that's going to be a role in the game, then the best of them, Trevor Hoffman, Lee Smith, I always voted for him, certainly Mariano Rivera, they ought to be honored in the Hall of Fame. Same thing with DHs. You know, and I would say this about Edgar Martinez. Can you name two players that ever got in the Hall of Fame because of defense? Now, I say two because you would say, well, Ozzie Smith did.
Yeah.
Likewise, can you think of one player that didn't get in the Hall of Fame because his defense was lousy?
No.
Edgar Martinez was an overwhelming offensive player. His on-base percentage was 21st all-time. His OPS, that's on-base per slugging, it's the 33rd best of all time. He was an amazing offensive player, and he didn't hurt his team defensively.
Because he didn't play.
Yeah.
No, that's right.
Right, that's right. Mussina was a long time getting in, and here's the reason. He played in an era, you know, of a certain – the voting populace is now skewing younger, more inclined to accept analytics. I think there are more ways to assess a player's career than ever before. But Mussina played – how many games did he play at Camden Yards? Fenway Park. He played in the American League East. He played at a time when the ballparks got smaller. The strike zone was the size of a postage stamp. The players got bigger. All of that stuff. And he and Schilling, too. Mussina was absolutely dominant. I mean, he was dominant. He pitched 200 innings 11 times. And there's a stat, there are all these new stats, but there's a stat called WAR for pitchers. And it's just an effort to try to put a guy's total career into context. Mussina's is 23rd all time. I mean, he's in that list. But if you're going by traditional numbers, ERA, things like that, you're going to go, nope, he doesn't measure up to Bob Gibson. Well, guess what? It's not. He didn't pitch in 1968. Had he pitched in 1968, he might have been in that conversation. He was absolutely that good. Let me get to Messina.
Let's have a little bit of pushback on Messina, right, because Boz wrote a column today. Tom Bozzo wrote a column lauding Messina and saying he should be in. And I hear you, and you covered him. I mean, you watched him pitch. My recollection of Mike Messina, and I'm going to strip away, you know, how smart he was going to Stanford. Okay, I'm not, because he's a pitcher. I don't really care where he went.
He did
to
read books. Now
I understand. He probably read the wrong books. Probably read the wrong ones. But I'll get to this. I never thought of him as the ace of any particular staff. In the way that I think of Max Scherzer, I did not think of Mike Messina in that way. And so to me, you can put him in the Hall of Fame, but if it was up to me, I'm not sure that I would have. You know, that's all. I thought that there were pitchers on staffs with him. I mean, he won 20 in his last year, and I'm old, so 20 means something. So ERA means something. So going out there and being handed the ball to stop a losing streak means something to me. You can respond.
I just think when you look at the totality of his career, he defined greatness to me.
Okay.
And by the way, if you met him, he's your kind of guy, Tony. He's a little bit on the snarky side. he would begin his post-game news conference by saying, Craig, that's not in the form of a question. Would you like to try again? Another time he would wait, maybe sometimes near the manager's office, and we would come out, he would go, well, how did he explain that one? Trust me, you would love Mike Mussina.
I'm sure.
And, you know, I was saying to Mark Feinsand, who's a loyal little...
Yeah, I know him.
I said, you know, I think of the Aaron Boone game, Game 7 ALCS 2003. I think of that as the Mariano Rivera game. On one day's rest, he took the ball and said, I'm not giving it back.
He was great.
Three innings.
He was great.
And Feinstein said, well, I think of it as the Mike Mussina game. On 2 days' rest, he went out there. Roger Clemens had been bad in that game. He went out there and threw three innings and just completely stifled the Red Sox and gave them a chance to get back in the game and gave Aaron Boone a chance to hit his way into immortality by winning the game.
All right. Halliday. Halliday.
Roy Halliday, if you go back, here's a guy that got sent back to A-ball early in his career. He had 11 seasons, 2001 to 2011. He was as good as, I'll put those numbers up against any pitcher who ever pitched. again, WAR. He was number one by a wide margin. He threw 64 complete games in that time. Nobody else had more than 30. That's more than 18 teams had. Wins. He had. You know, he was one behind Sabathia. His WHIP. How many base runners you allow? Just over one. I mean, he was unbelievably great. There's a crossover between Halliday and Rivera. Halliday kept seeing Rivera and kept going, show me how to hold that cutter. He ended up taking a baseball and outlining his thumb on the ball to show how Rivera held the cutter. He was absolutely great. I know people will say, well, this is a sympathy vote because he died 14 months ago. No, he deserved it. He absolutely deserved it. Chase Utley tells a story of Halliday's first spring with the Blue Jays. Chase gets there at 5:45 in the morning. So I'm going to set a tone. We got to be serious this year. Halliday had already been there and been through a workout. And he went, whoa, this dude's a real thing.
I knew you'd have a story. I'm happy about that. Let me get to the sort of overarching thing.
I can tell you about the time he swam in the Amazon, too, but that's a little bit longer.
Let me get to the sort of overarching story as you look at the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Barry Bonds, one of the greatest hitters of all time. On the real short list, no way there's 10 better than either of them at their craft. They did not get in again. Tim Kirkjian on SportsCenter, in the overnight SportsCenter, said he does not believe they will get in. They'll go 10 years and they will not get in. What are your thoughts as to the progress they're making? And when you talk about the skewing younger for voters, are they going to be more forgiving?
Well, they have been more forgiving, widely more forgiving. But what Timmy's saying is their progress is stalled. I think one went up by 11 votes, one by 13. Contrast that to Larry Walker, who got 88 more votes. So it does appear there's been people have just said, I'm not going to vote for them. Here's what bothers me about that. Like you said, they are the best of their generation. Damn. And if you just take Bonds before he got big, 15 seasons, that's a Hall of Fame number. He had three MVPs. He had 494 home runs. You take Clemens just in Boston, 13 seasons, three Cy Young Awards, an MVP. I mean, they are the best. So what we're saying is we're going to play a guessing game with steroids. The steroid era did exist. It did happen. And they were the best of the best. We're going to play a guessing game. We're going to reward the guys that got caught. Because let's be honest. There have been steroid users voted into the Hall of Fame already.
Right, sure.
And so we're gonna punish the guys that got caught, reward the guys that got away. It gets too complicated. When you get the ballot, forget the morality of it. These are competitors that wanted to be the best they could, and just vote for the best players. You go down that road of saying, you know, okay, this there are steroid users in the Hall of Fame. Steroids happened, and I cannot, and I know it would be a huge storm. I know there would be Hall of Famers upset about it and all of that. But, like, I was around those two guys. Like, there are certain players, like Ken Griffey Jr., when they walk in the room, it's different. And those guys were the most different of all. So that's my take on that. But I do agree that it seems that their progress has been stalled.
I don't know
enough voters are going to die in the next 3 years.
Well, Richie, I wonder if the new transparency in the voting is going to make people intimidated to vote for somebody who is clearly a steroid user.
Well, I think because in the ballots that are made public, those guys were doing well. I mean, right at borderline 70% of the vote. It's the people that don't reveal their votes that tend to be older, don't know what the internet is, all of those things. They lose about 20 points when those are announced. You know, there's a certain feeling of a morality that it's a sacred place, blah blah blah, all that stuff. It's a problem, you know, and I think it's going to be with us forever. You know, because if you're going to get the ballot in your hand, you're going to say, okay, I think this guy did, this guy didn't, this guy. I mean, wow. All right, can you imagine that?
Yeah.
I think you just put it on the plaques. A Hall of Fame without Pete Rose, without Roger Clemens, and without Barry Bonds has left out three of the 20 greatest players of all time. They've just left them out arbitrarily.
I agree.
So I don't get that. All right, I'll get you out of here on this. What is the holdup with Machado and Harper, and does one control the other in the sense, is somebody waiting for one of them to be signed? Is there a priority there, and then the other gets signed?
Well, I think there is a one-upsmanship with both of them. And I think in the case of Harper, his agent, Scott Boras, wants to set records. I mean, he wants $400 million, and I just think teams are reluctant to do that. I think the Dodgers would be happy to go 5 years, 6 years, and you could just almost name the dollar figure. But 10 years for a 26-year-old, they're not going to do it. One of the things analytics has done is you don't pay big money for an age 31, 32 season. I was with baseball is determined that your peak year is when you're 27. Ironically, the same thing in the NFL, age 27. So if you're going to give a guy big money when he's turning 31 or 32, it's not going to happen. In terms of Machado, I think it's been a little bit harder for him to find. I think the Yankees wanted him, but they weren't in love with him, and they weren't going to go 10, 11, 20 years. They weren't going to do that. And so now, do you want to play for the White Sox? You can get the 7 years there. I just think neither one of them is going to get 10 years, and I think it's a struggle for them to accept what's out there. Ultimately, I think Harper ends up with the Phillies and Machado with the White Sox, but that prediction has an expiration date, because until they don't sign with the Dodgers and the Yankees, the Dodgers and the Yankees will always be in the conversation.
Thank you, Richie. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Jeannie.
Bye, Richie.
Richard Justice, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
As I say all the time about the Lowe's ad, it's my favorite ad because it has me read something that is ridiculous. I don't fix anything. I call the worker men. That's what I do. But I'll read nonetheless because I like the copy. Lowe's is my new go-to destination where I can explore the latest innovative Craftsman products, including their new V20 power tool battery platform. Like to go into a Lowe's. Just show me the platform. I'd like to see that. Craftsman's V20 cordless power tool lineup features a high-capacity lithium battery that's part of Craftsman's interchangeable battery system. So it works with all the tools in their V20 lineup, giving you the runtime you need and the power you deserve. The one battery system works on multiple products, making the V20 lineup easy to use and versatile. If you like tools, these are good. I know they're good.
That's right.
I do. V20 brushless power tools are proudly made in the United States. They're global materials used, but they're made in Charlotte, North Carolina. All have brushless motors delivering, and they're durable too, I'm sure, delivering high efficiency, better runtime, more power, and greater durability for all of your projects. You can explore the entire Craftsman V20 lineup at your local Lowe's store, or you can visit Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony. Lowe's, the new home of Craftsman.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
We are back with the almost faithful. This is called Big Blue Dervish. If people like the almost faithful want to send us their music, which we will play on Two for Tuesday, even though it's Wednesday, which we will play, and we will play in their entirety at the end of the podcast and as bumper music during the podcast. Michael, how do they go about doing that?
Email us your music by sending it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And we are not selling anything today.
There's been a little bit of confusion over the gift with purchase, getting the hat from Johnny O. I've let them know. And to simplify this, because this is just a run through the Super Bowl next week, we might just do a discount, so stay tuned for that. But I would like to thank all of our listeners. As you remember, December, we did a joint venture with Johnny O to give some money back and to donate that money to the First Tee of Greater Washington, D.C. So we're going to be writing that check this week. So thank you to all of you who made those holiday purchases.
Very nice. Very good. Nigel, you have news for us?
I do. And I was just wondering, before I get to the news proper, if I wanted to have a party or a gathering...
I believe you can have it at Chatter.
We could do that, really?
I believe we will be accessible to that. We'll make your party or gathering very, very nice.
If I was looking for a T-shirt...
You can get T-shirts and for $12.
Just $12?
Just $12. It say Chatter on them. And you can buy gift cards for people. Though I wouldn't advise you to buy gift cards for people that live, you know, out of the area.
Well, it's like a keepsake. You just keep,
well, that's
dopey.
You know, don't do that. All right, go ahead.
Mr. Tony, we will start off, as we often do, with hockey in this newscast. The Washington Capitals, your Washington Capitals, lose again last night. They do get a point, so they got 60 points and still in second place in the vaunted Met division.
But they've played six games in a row that they haven't won.
Yes, and they've let up 15 goals in the last two games, although they've scored 11.
In that streak, they gave up 7 to Nashville, 8 to Chicago, and 7 to San Jose. That's an enormous amount of goals in
hockey. They held Trotsky to just 2, though.
You know, yeah. But they won.
But
Trotz won.
That goal thing, I mean, we're not hockey experts here, but that's far more problematic than a six-game losing streak.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
Teams are going to lose six games, or not necessarily.
Is this our boy Braden Holtby? Is he in the net?
Holtby and Phoenix Copley have been taking turns, I think.
Not good.
But it's a tying goal
with 0.6 seconds.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, with less than a second.
And then they lose it in the overtime.
I don't know why,
but I'm not worried.
Yeah, because I think... Yeah.
It's because you're playing with house money right now?
Well, I mean,
still, that could be.
They're still in second place in the division.
All you got to do is get in the playoffs, and then anything can happen, right?
Puck luck.
Yeah, puck luck. There you go. To college basketball, Mr. Tony. A lot of games last night. Binghamton not playing last night.
We didn't play.
You guys do play tonight. I'll find out who you're playing. I'll find out that in just a second. But Duke is a winner over Pittsburgh, 79-64. Virginia bounces back from their loss to Duke. They beat Wake Forest. And Buffalo, the 14th
Buffalo
ranked.
Buffalo loses.
Yeah, 14th ranked team in the country.
At Northern Illinois, they lose.
By two, 77-75.
Yeah, that's the MAC. Not the MAC.
The MAC. That's just the MAC.
Bearcats play the Riverhawks tonight, Tony. Today at Bailey Arena. You know who the Riverhawks are?
I do not.
UMass Lowell.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's a winnable game, right?
It's home. It should be winnable. I would think it's winnable.
Should be.
Michigan got a buzzer beater to beat
Michigan.
That's
right.
Michigan and Virginia bounced back from recent losses. That's enough on that.
Okay. There you go. To football, Mr. Tony. Kansas City Chiefs have fired defensive coordinator Bob Sutton after the loss to the Patriots. No report on who they will bring in.
Tom Brady beat you. Tom Brady went right down the field on your defense and beat you. Which he's done to 1,000 other people over a long time.
I don't think he was fired because of that.
What do you think he was?
I think he was fired because of the fact that all season long everyone said this team is going to have difficulty winning a Super Bowl because their defense is
poor. Well, why don't you fire the GM? I mean, this guy's working with what you got him.
Yeah, but the story I read this morning said that they went out of their way to shore up the defense this season, and His numbers have not been good for the whole... I think he's been there 6 years. Numbers have not been good.
Maybe that's true. It just seems sort of punitive to me. It seemed like Tom Brady stuck it down our throats in the overtime, and so you have to go. I don't know.
Fire the guy who flipped the coin.
He has to go. I think we all agree on that. 524 yards of offense for the Patriots, 36 first downs.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
But that's what the Patriots do.
Right.
The Patriots... This is something, you need to factor in that the playoffs in football are different from other sports other than college basketball in the sense that they're one game playoffs. You can lose on some freak thing. The Patriots have been in the Super Bowl 9 times in Brady's 18 seasons.
Times.
In the Super Bowl. It's unbelievable. Times. There's no sport. There's nothing like this in sports.
No.
There's nothing like this. This is the 9th time. And and the two constants are Brady and Belichick. They are the constants.
That's it.
You look, I did this yesterday. Bill Belichick's team has 5 first-round picks on their starting unit of their 22 starters. 5 first-round picks. Los Angeles Rams have 9. 5 is probably the lowest in the league because first-round picks get recycled all the time. He's not dealing with a roster that is intimidating to any other team. They're not, but he knows what he's doing, and they know what they're doing. In the middle of the year, I thought, wow, their defense can't hold up. They're slow. They can't catch anybody. Nobody's faster than Kansas City. They beat Kansas City.
It's a defensive endeavor, playoffs.
And then when they lost Josh Gordon, they said, well, that was their deep threat.
Now they can't go deep.
Yeah, and they've, you know.
Look at Edelman. You can't even believe he can
do
this.
He's my size.
Yeah.
And to your point about the lack of number ones, who was clamoring to get Julian Edelman on the team?
Nobody.
And
Chris Tom Brady, 7th round draft pick.
Right.
I mean, Julian Edelman is, as Chris pointed out the other day,
is a quarterback from
Akron Kent State.
Kent State. Yeah, that's
quarterback.
Right.
And now he makes every hard catch there is to make. I just
with a beard.
Yeah. Just amazing. They are amazing to me. And I'm looking for reasons to say that the Rams will beat them. You know, in my head, I'm thinking maybe the Rams will beat them. Maybe
my daughter is 17 and a half.
All she's seen is
the
Patriots.
First time I watched the Patriots in the Super Bowl, she was a newborn. She was an infant. I mean, the first time I saw Tom Brady, quarterback in the Patriots. I mean, that is a long career.
This just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't.
It can't happen
in
that sport.
Yeah.
For that to happen, you know, you How many times, like Duke is a great basketball team, Kentucky, how many times have they been in the finals in the last 18 years? Well, they haven't been nine times.
No, it hasn't been nine
times. No, they haven't been. You don't have to look it up. They have not been nine times.
I mean, they may not have been to nine Final Fours.
Yeah. The only, I mean, this is like UCLA, but it was much different in the NCAA tournament back then.
Celtics.
Yeah, the Celtics in the 60s. And again, the league was
a long time.
It's a long time. Or the Yankees back in the 50s or something like that.
This is 60 years ago.
It's just remarkable. Yeah. It really is. Mr. Tony, we have another candidate for president.
Who is this guy?
I do not know how to pronounce his last name. He is the mayor of South Bend.
Which is considered the cradle of presidents in the United States
of
America.
Yes, several of your presidents. Yeah, Eisenhower, Lincoln, yes. Pete, and I apologize from this, Buttigieg, is that right? Is that
what we're going with?
Yeah, that's called Tropic Thunder. Buttigieg. Another underrated movie.
Mayor Pete is what I will call him in this newscast. Yes.
Who's this guy?
He's the mayor of Austin. That's all I know about
every
him.
Day somebody else declares. Is he a Democrat?
Just to clarify, forming an exploratory committee.
Well, they all go. They all jump.
He is a 37-year-old Democrat.
Just turned 37. Just turned 37
2 years,
on Saturday.
He's just 2 years into his qualifying status. You got to be 35.
35 is the age. Yeah.
Rhodes Scholar, lieutenant in the Navy Reserve, served a tour in Afghanistan in 2014.
Okay. Why are we voting for him? What is his?
This is what he says. I belong to a generation that is stepping forward right now. We're the generation that lived through school shootings, that served in the wars after 9/11, and we're the generation that stands to be the first to make less than our parents unless we do something different. We can't just polish off a system so broken. It's a season for boldness and a focus on the future.
By the way, openly gay male, married to a man.
It's fine. Yep. All of this is fine. Love it. But who's going to vote for this guy?
Who would vote for a reality TV star?
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
So there's just no predicting.
Yeah. So how many people are in the field already?
Who wants this highly educated politician?
We're 2 years out. And there's like 15 people.
It's more than that. I mean, if you include everyone who has launched one of these exploratory things, it's like a couple.
What are you exploring? Save your money for the bumper stickers. Stop exploring anything.
Yeah.
Because somebody
they're
will come back.
Whether or not they
somebody
can raise
will come
the
back
money.
And say to you, "Are you nuts? Nobody's going to vote for you." So just go.
Yeah. And Mr. Turner, we have a story coming to you from Wisconsin. This given to us by faithful listener Chris Saliza. This is all right. Police say a 34-year-old Wisconsin man reportedly went on a violent rampage because he believed his 46-year-old wife damaged some of his action figures. That's right, the
toy action figures.
Yes. In response to the possible damage, the husband, whom authorities have not yet identified, allegedly tore through his Madison home with a log-splitting axe, destroying his own property, including furniture, a laptop, and a television, which were among the $5,000 worth of damage.
Well, what's the crime?
What's the crime?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to take an axe to the stuff you own.
Well,
let me just say.
You break it, you bought it. That's
right.
How it works.
The suspect then moved outside and smashed the family car, chopping off both side mirrors and eventually striking the windshield with such force that the axe became stuck.
Is it his car?
It is his car. And he actually called 911 and said, yeah, I've done something bad. So,
well, why even call 911?
Call the local news.
He said he reportedly told
Fox 5.
Launch an exploratory committee for presidential run.
He reportedly told detectives he was drinking too much and then may have overreacted when he thought his wife destroyed his figurines.
Did you see that Anne Hathaway gave up drinking? I didn't know she was much of a drinker.
I didn't know that was a problem.
I saw it on TV. She said she's given up drinking.
I still don't understand that.
Actress.
Among the charges were disorderly conduct.
Okay.
So
I don't know.
I mean, I guess they run it differently in Dane County.
When you can't go nuts in your own home.
Yeah, it's his stuff.
I mean, how many times have you done that, Gary? I mean, at least once
a
week, right?
But I mean, did he threaten another person?
I'm sure there
disorderly
were things,
conduct.
I'm sure there were
the
things
charge.
Coming out of his mouth while he was, you know, swinging the axe.
Sure, it's not reported, but Nigel's sure there were things coming
out. Action figures.
A lot of alcohol and power tools is not a good combination.
It's not.
Yes.
It's not. Okay.
Paul Bunyan.
And that's all we've got.
Well, we have Tiger. I mean, tomorrow, Tiger, Sanzi's going to be out there.
Oh, we got the note from Sanzi.
Sanzi's
that's right,
gonna
yes.
going to be out there watching Tiger. Michael, Tiger has won 8 times at Torrey Pines in a variety of tournaments, including the U.S. Junior, I think he won. At Torrey Pines. Do we like him? Do we think he's going
to
win?
Why do you just set me up to be attacked by your listeners?
Why?
Just so you know, I did not plan for any of this Tiger talk. This is a non-story. But if you ask.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
I think the big thing is we have to take a look at the new clubs in his bag. So he did a full rebuild this offseason. They still look very similar to what he's used in the past. It comes down to weather. It comes down to has he rebounded from the fatigue he felt at the end of last season? Remember, before the match
with Phil,
that debacle, the last time we saw him was in Paris when he was seemingly wearing scuba gear because the mid-60s were too cold for his Florida body. So some of those early mornings out in California with the heavy rough after some of the rainfall could be a little bit tough. But at this point, see what he does. I wouldn't be surprised if he has one great round and we see his name flirting up that leaderboard. But that's a really tough tournament to come back.
So here's what Wilbon is afraid of. And this makes sense to me. Wilbon played Torrey Pines as recently as a couple of weeks ago. He said at the time the rough was 4.5 inches and their plan was to grow it to 5.5 inches. 5.5 inches, you can't find the ball. Honestly, you can't even find the ball. So if you're in the rough because you spray it off the tee, as Tiger does with the driver.
He's better now.
Okay,
so
but you have to
fine-tuning that
to
driver.
To dig really down to get the ball out, that can hurt your back. Wilbon is worried about Tiger's back in the rough.
You should always be worried about the back out at that tournament just for the sheer fact that you're going out to practice when it's still in the 40s in the morning and you might get these beautiful days. Take a look at that driver. When he played really well at the end of the summer and through the fall, he was driving it well. He was controlling both shots. So take a look at what configurations he's doing. And if we want to go all golfy on it, see about those spin numbers to see if it's staying in the fairway.
By the way, one more quick story unrelated that will be of interest to you.
If people don't like to hear the golf talk, they don't have to listen.
eBay has, well, I wasn't.
Oh.
eBay has pulled a listing that went up this weekend that was advertised as, quote, Prince Philip car crash parts. It seems that a local person
his
in that
own
village
parts or had, the car's parts.
Someone had collected three plastic parts from the car wreck and what looked like a bunch of broken glass and posted it, including that it may, quote, may even have Phil's DNA on it in case you want to clone him or something, close quote. It
or
was up to about
something.
Eight. Here's a little picture of it.
I'll pay $50 for
the
that.
Debris was actually up to $85,000 U.S. with 5 days left in the auction, but eBay pulled it down. They were not having it. The listing was removed in line with our policy relating to the sale of any item that seeks to profit from human suffering or tragedy, even though the individual listing it claimed the money was going to go to cancer research or some such.
Or something.
eBay was not having
or something.
That was my cousin.
At the end is always or something.
That was my cousin Fergus who was collecting those pieces.
All right, let's get out of here. And we will have Old Guy Radio when we return, where we will talk again about the Academy Award nominations, because we have different people to talk about.
And you saw another movie last night, right?
I saw another movie. I saw The Wife with Glenn Close. And we will talk about the impending move closer to us of WTOP, which is, for those people who don't know this, the number one rated news station probably in the United States of America. Yeah. It really is.
Will traffic and weather still be on the eights?
I hope it's still on the eights. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are the Temptations. This is the thing you do. This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is not the most famous Temptation song. The most famous Temptation song is My Girl.
Yes.
The bass line in My Girl in the area of critical commentary, if you don't know what song that is, you need to leave the building. Need to leave the building. Why are we playing the Temptations today?
Because this song was released on this date in 1964.
So that's 55 years ago.
Yeah, just before the Beatles dominated like every single chart.
Yeah.
You know, you were still getting amazing songs coming out. And the song was actually, it's not a Holland Dozier Holland song. It's actually written by Smokey Robinson and Bobby Rogers of the Miracles, because when they were on the bus, you know, traveling around, they used to trade back and forth really cheesy pickup lines. And at some point, they said, oh, we should start writing these down. And they said, oh, we have a song. And the Temptations hadn't really had a big hit. So they said, here, why don't you guys use this one? And
Hitsville, USA, right?
Yes.
I mean, it was a period of time. There's a 4 or 5 year period of time where every week another song came out and you went, whoa, that's better than the last song.
Yeah.
I mean, by them, by the Four Tops, by the Miracles, ultimately the Jackson 5. I mean, they all recorded.
Nobody ever walked up to me in a bar and said, as pretty as you are, you could have been a flower. Fortunately.
Nobody ever said that. If good looks was a minute, you know that you could be an hour.
Never happened.
Okay. Are you from Nashville? Because you're the only 10 I see. Never heard that one?
Oh, that's really good. Okay, so let me just say this. At WTOP, which, as I said, is the number one rated radio station in Washington, D.C.
Only for 20 years.
Yeah, and probably the number one rated news station in the entire country.
Number one billing,
yeah, definitely
I would venture
to
say.
Yes.
So they've been on We are on the corner, as you know, Chatter is on the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Streets. They're about a mile and a half down the road on Idaho Avenue. And when we did the show, the Washington Post radio show, that's where we did the show, from those studios. They are moving north, and they are going across the state line into Maryland. They're going to Chevy Chase, Maryland. But it's only about five blocks from here. They're going into the building where all of us have doctors. Because all those buildings have doctors.
Is that on that side of the street?
It's either 54
or 5530.
I'll see if I can get that address.
5425.
Oh, no, that's not a doctor building.
Which
building
is that?
That's on that other side of the street, though.
So that's on the Saks side?
Yeah, it's on the Rodeo Drive side.
Those, you know what? There's a very fancy couple of block shopping center in Washington and Maryland.
Because right the stores there. Yeah.
The stores overlap. And every day another store goes out of business.
Yeah.
Right.
Because this is not an area that will support that. Mm-mm. It's not Worth Avenue. It's not Rodeo Drive. It's not, you know, Park Avenue. It's not. It's just not. And these incredibly expensive stores come in and they go out. Right? Quickly.
Except for Tiffany, I think. Yeah,
which has been there for a million years.
Right.
And Polo. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows what you're getting with Polo. But except for those, restaurants go in and restaurants go out. Retail shoe stores go in and shoe stores go out. Anyway, to the people, if they're listening, and I'm sure we have some listeners at WTOP, we would love for you to come here and eat and spend money.
Yes,
eat and drink and spend money.
And since they're sort of moving into our territory, do we get a percentage of their profits? I mean,
I don't think we get
a big wet when they are.
Yeah,
I don't
think
so. I'll talk to Polly. Polly
Walnut. So
30 years they've been at that other place.
Yeah. So I've watched this movie. I'm trying... With all the screeners that I have, and I don't have them all, I don't have A Star Is Born, which everybody who I talk to seems to have liked.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Did you see A Star Is
Born? No, I don't.
I've seen it before.
You don't
want to
see those kinds.
I can't see a movie where a man dies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. No, that's okay. So I'm now, I have a bunch of them,
Spoiler alert. I have
one called The Wife, and Glenn Close is nominated. I thought Jonathan Pryce should have been nominated as well. I thought he was very, very good. How do I describe this movie? I'll describe this movie because I'm an extraordinarily critical human being. So the first thing I would say about this movie is it's not Michael Clayton. It's just not.
Right.
But
Michael Clayton is the top of the
Yeah,
top
Michael Clayton is the top. It's a movie that when you got done with the movie, what were the notes that I took? That it I don't want to diminish it, but it felt like a stage play. It was mostly two characters. There was yelling, there was screaming. The relationships devolved as you went on. There's a use of flashback to tell you how it happened that could have been done on a side set in a stage play. And it ends, there's a finality to the ending of it. And I've seen a lot of these plays. One was The Humans, for example, where when I'm done, you know, it's wrenching and you just go, why do you think this is so great? Mm-hmm. Why do you think this is so great? Now, how is Glenn Close? Well, Glenn Close has a very, very good controlled performance. Glenn Close allows herself to look her age, which I think is 70. Right, Jean? She's about 70.
I'll Google that for you, boss.
Yeah, about that.
She's about 70. She allows herself to look her age. She's a very, very good actor, and it is said that she will finally win an Oscar.
71.
Okay, so, and she's very good. To me, like, what I remember her most from are The Big Chill, which...
And sure. Fatal Attraction.
Rabbit Boiler.
I never saw Fatal Attraction.
Oh, yeah.
But these are 30 and 40 years old, these movies.
Correct.
And when she stands up in The Natural, and she's bathed in the light, you go, wow, what a shot by a director.
Right.
What a shot by a director. But Glenn Close, is Glenn Close considered a great actress?
First balloter?
She's never won an Oscar.
Has she been nominated a bunch?
I think she has.
Can we look that up?
I can look that up.
But I'm sure if she gets the Oscar this time, it's because people think this is the last opportunity to give her an Oscar. Whereas, I guess, Lady Gaga would be her major competition.
Right.
She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in Garp, Big Chill, and The Natural, Best Actress, Fatal Attraction, Dangerous Liaisons, Albert Nobbs, and now The Wife.
What was the one you just said?
Oh, Albert Nobbs, 2011.
What's that?
She played a man. She played like a butler or something.
2011.
Albert Nobbs?
Six nominations. She's won 3 Golden Globes, most recently for The Wife.
Well, that just happened. Yeah, so I think maybe she'll win. Who do you think is her biggest
I think Lady Gaga.
Not Melissa McCarthy, not Olivia Colman. Nobody will have seen Olivia Colman, and not Yalitza Aparicio in Roma.
Oh, well, now she apparently is a strong actress. I haven't seen Roma yet.
And here at the great risk of making people... Oh, let me just say this. By the way, for people who have it into their heads, who have, like, taken a screwdriver and opened up the side of their heads to put this in, that Anne Hornaday is somehow not on this show, that's nuts. I've not been on the show on Fridays a lot, which is the best day for Anne. There haven't been, as we will discuss from the Oscar nominations, a lot of movies that anybody's really cared about. Anne will be on with us on Friday.
We love Anne.
And, you know, yes, we love Anne.
Stop already.
Yeah.
Stop with the conspiracy theories, please. Stop with keeping score. I'm happy you invest yourself in the show, but don't look at every little thing that happens and come to a conclusion that is, in the words that I used to use, whacked out. Okay? Because it's
very 1990.
Right. It's not that. So I wanted to go over, we didn't give this a lot, the Best Picture nominees. I just want to go over Best Picture because to me, this is an indication that there aren't that many great movies. Black Panther, I'm told, is absolutely great. But it's a comic book movie. It's of a certain genre. It's in there not only because it's really good, because it made $300 million. And you have to acknowledge that people spent a lot of money to see this and loved it.
Made more than all the other Best Picture nominees combined.
And there's no question about that. Black Klansman, I've seen it. It ain't great. Not Michael Clayton. It's fine. Bohemian Rhapsody, I haven't seen it. I've got it. I want to watch it. I've been told people liked it a lot, but I don't think they think of it as great. The Favorite, I've seen it. It's fine. It's snarky. It's mean. The costumes are beautiful. And 30 minutes in, I looked around and asked myself why I was continuing to watch this movie. And it's because it's not The Queen. You know, it's that kind of movie, but it's not as good to me as a Green Book. I think people like.
I loved it.
Thank you. Well, you did?
Yeah.
You saw Rhapsody too, didn't you?
Yeah, and I liked Rhapsody. Yeah. Well, I liked that actor. He was good, and I love the actors in Green Book too.
Okay, would you have called Bohemian Rhapsody? Would you have thought that it was going to be nominated as Best Picture?
If you've got 10 Best Pictures, I can see it being
eight
there.
This year. You got as many as 10, but they used 8.
I can see it being there.
Roma, and here is the thing I'm going to reveal for the 99th time. I don't want to go to the movies to read them. I don't. I want to see them and be engulfed by them and not have to study up and then look up quickly to see what just happened and if I missed something. So I'm not, Roma's not going to be my kind of movie. A Star is Born, this is the fourth A Star is Born. You know, you loved it, right?
Yeah, I really did.
And Vice, I've seen Vice.
You said Vice was a bit mean.
It has brilliance in parts. It's unbelievably mean. It's unbelievably mean to everybody.
Bothered you since when?
I don't know. It's just so mean. Because you know why? Because it purports to be history. You know, it has the patina of truth.
Here was my problem with Vice.
Do you agree with me? Not great?
Yes, I agree with you completely. I love the
Christian
acting.
Bale.
But the same director did The Big Short. And he used the same techniques in The Big Short to explain an incredibly complicated economic situation.
Which this is not.
This is
the techniques
not.
Being like the fourth wall and the
yeah, people come in and out.
Yeah, exactly. And it didn't need it. And I think this could have been a much better movie if he hadn't used those clever little jumps. Can I say something about The Favorite?
Yeah.
I don't want to be a spoiler here, but there were two movies this year, The Favorite and First Reform, which were praised by critics.
Yes.
I'm old-fashioned in the sense that I like a movie that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It doesn't have to have a happy ending. It can have a sad ending. It doesn't have to have a surprise ending. It can be a predictable ending. But I want an end. I want resolution. And I blame David Chase for the last episode of The Sopranos for creating this. I mean, it's like, remember in the 60s, it was like the audience was on drugs and the directors were sober. Now I feel like the directors are on drugs and the audience. is sober.
So I've seen movies in the last 5-6 years. I mean, I walked out of... I don't mean I walked out in anger. I walked out when Birdman was done thinking I'd seen a great movie.
I loved that movie.
That was a great movie. I thought Spotlight was a great movie.
Yes, love Spotlight.
I mean, just you're in it and you go, wow, that's great. And when you're in a great movie, I don't know if this is true for everybody, but it's true for me. 30 minutes in, I know I'm in a great movie.
Yeah.
And none of the things that I have seen, none of them got me to that point where I, where, because the point you reach is this: you don't care where you are or who is near you, you are absolutely locked in to this movie.
Yeah. Did you see Green Book?
I have not. Okay. I hear good things about Green Book. It was at the Avalon for a year.
Why weren't you there?
I don't know. I was busy breaking my ribs.
For you.
Yeah. Well, the seat that I paid for because I contributed to the Avalon.
Don't say my. Just say I was busy breaking ribs. It makes you sound
so. I don't know. I mean, these don't look like the greatest movies in the world. They don't.
It's not a great.
But we'll talk to Ann about it on Friday.
Oh, is she going to be here?
Yeah, we're going to have Ann on the show. No, she'll physically be here.
So
no, she's not. No,
we're removed from exile.
No, yeah, she's her exile. She served her time.
By the way, there is one movie that's not on the awards list. I think it came out too late. I just wanted to mention it to you guys. It's a documentary on World War One. I don't know if you've heard about
This is the one where the Peter Jackson mixed color movies out of it.
Yeah, it's called They Shall Not Grow Old, and it just, it's quite simply the finest film I've ever seen. I mean, it just takes your breath away. It's
the coloring of it does.
It's not like it was when they colored Robin Hood and you're like, It's a Wonderful Life. You're like, this is garbage. Yeah. No, it looks as if somebody had a camera back in 1916 in France and was filming this thing, and they restored audio to it. He just went through, he did this for like 6 years.
Is it a documentary?
It's a documentary. There's no narration. The only voices you hear are interviews that he put in there from that they did in the 1960s with World War One vets. And it just, it takes you through the life of...
So it's not like When Harry Met Sally, where they're putting the interviews in the middle.
I'll have what she's having.
Just make you laugh.
No, but it's, I mean, it may not be for everybody. I think everyone should watch it. I mean, but it's just brilliant.
Gene, you agree, like when you're in the middle of a movie and you know...
Yeah.
You know, it's like I felt, not everybody will feel this way. I felt that way about La La Land. I said, this is great.
Well, you
this
felt that way 5 minutes in.
I just thought, wow.
I felt that way about La La Land.
Star Wars.
And Moonlight last year. Both of those two movies transported me from the moment they began.
And not just movies. I mean, we were talking before the show about this season of True Detective. I feel the same way in that. Yes. I just find myself...
I haven't seen episode three
yet. And there are times in that series, you know, you have time to think to yourself because it's not really unfolding at a breakneck pace. But there's times where I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm just like, I so enjoy this.
And the music is haunting.
Yeah. It is. And Mahershala Ali is
T-Bone Burnett, baby. Yeah. There's nothing he does that isn't great. T-Bone. He knows what he's doing.
Midas touch.
I would hire him.
Yeah.
If I ever owned a restaurant, I'd hire
Maybe
him.
Maybe he'll send us some music.
All right. Let's get out of here, and we will have email and a jingle when we return. Yes?
Yes.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony's mailbag, got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag, gonna read some for all of you folks.
That's Kirsten Ohnstadt with a beautiful voice.
So good.
Yes.
Playing the ukulele, accompanying herself. Let me thank Richard Justice of MLB.com for coming on with us today. Let me thank our sponsors, Lowe's and Brooklinen. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. This comes from Dave Shockey in Sacramento, California. If you're not tuned in to News Channel 8, you can't see it. But he writes, "Dear Mr. Tony, my dog weighs 14 and a half pounds. My 3-month-old son weighs 14 and a quarter, but should be up to 14 and a half by the fight. The dog definitely has the reach advantage, but I think my son's ability to wake up screaming 4 times a night makes this an even match. My prediction, Wilbon won't be surprised. The dog's head and the baby's head are the same size as they're looking at each other growling.
Oh, that is
from
so
John
cute.
In New Orleans. Time. I can't believe that I found myself nodding in agreement with Wilbon's latest NFL tirade. Maybe I have PTSD. And apparently New Orleans in the University of Central Florida is the University of Central Florida now because a city council person wants to have a parade during the Super Bowl. My dog weighs 62 pounds. Yes, we're asking people what dog weighs. From Ed Butt, Colorado Littles were all set to raise a glass with Anita from Alaska on Friday when she came to visit Denver. Next week, however, work is taking her to the shores of the Arctic Ocean, the headwaters of the infamous polar vortex. Not only will she be experiencing 24 hours of darkness each day and cold that we contiguous staters can only imagine, she will be so remote that there is no plane to take her back to balmy Anchorage until that Saturday. As Marx famously said, work is the curse of the drinking class. So inspired by those immortal words of Bluto Blutarsky, did the Americans stop drinking when the Russians bombed Pearl Harbor? Yeah. We are going to get together anyway. We will all meet at 5:30 next Friday, February 1st, at Fate Brewing, 1636th in Boulder. It's just a block west of the Arapahoe exit on the Foothills Parkway, so it's easy to get there from all over Metro Denver. All littles are invited. As usual, just say La Cheeserie to the bouncer, and she'll send you to our table. Finally, will you please extend a special invitation to that prolific emailer, Tim Cree, of Fort Collins, Colorado. He was at our last gathering, but for some strange reason, no one was aware enough to get any contact info. This time, I promise you, we will have a sign-in sheet. Oh, and I almost forgot, Ed Butt writes, Edith Saliza. From Bob Steen in Centerville, Virginia, Labrador Retriever, 92 pounds. Sleeps anywhere he wants to.
Yeah, he does.
Big dog. Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. If Cardi B dog walks, Tommy Lahren. I hope she remembers to watch out for any black eyes. Joe Farrell, the chief nautical little in Olney by the Sea in Maryland. Like you, I am fascinated by Daniel Snyder's new 305-foot yacht. My sources at the marina tell me Danny is only going to use 205 feet. The remaining 100 feet will be covered by a tarp. That's a shot. That's a really shot. Funny. That's from Rio Kitcari in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Shouldn't the NFL broadcast the Chiefs versus the Saints and dub it the Untainted Super Bowl? I think the NFL is missing an opportunity here. Guaranteed to get Wilbon watching. By the way, dog weight, 63.2 pounds. Sydney, 10-year-old boxer. Alex Cloninger, in wake of your discussion of the feud between Tommy Lahren and Cardi B yesterday, you ignored the D.C. slant on the story. D.C. native Wale has an ongoing feud with Tommy Lahren in which he refers to her only by the name Tammy. It started after she insulted Jay-Z and Wale came after her on Twitter and then in one of his raps. She got mad that he messed up her name, and from that point on, Wale has made a point of never calling her by her right name. There, now you're caught up on the ways that Tammy Lahren shows up in the hip-hop landscape.
This is like Twitter watching beef. The Grammys. I have no idea who these people are.
Mindy Anderson. Dear Mr. Tony, you asked for the weight of our dogs. Here are the weights of mine. I can send you the weights of my two horses, 4 pet Texas Longhorns, 2 pet goats, and 9 cats, too, if you'd like. Wow. Bailey, 45. Templeton, 15. Grit, 30. Maggie, 60. Annie, 75. Rufy, 85.
It's a baseball team.
70. And Sadie, 60
I'd be interested in the weight of the Longhorn steer.
That's got to be thousands, doesn't it?
I'm going to guess 1876.
Just is that like the year? Like the year? That
no, that's the weight.
Seth Tibbs writes, first-time caller, long-time caller, first-time listener, Beagle coming in at 27, Hound Terrier Mix coming in at 37 pounds. Both are rescue dogs. Perry Siebert in Ann Arbor. So I didn't get to hear the expert analysis of Howard anymore, and instead I'm treated to you reading the political tweets of Cardi B. This show stinks. 12 pounds at 10 pounds. At least that's what it feels like when I dog walk them. I got to find out what it means to dog walk somebody. It's got to be really terrible.
We said it yesterday.
It's bad.
It means
right?
to yeah. beat somebody
to work them over.
And then drag them around as if you were walking a dog.
Yeah. So great. If you're out of New Bitesland, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Don't do it, Tony.
Thank you.
Voices in the night, the snores of pets as they dream. This tired house cracks like ice beneath the weight of memory. I lay upon an unmade bed. Previews of my life, comforted by vanity. Every night it's all the same. whispers in the night. The ghosts of all humanity. Someone's trying to ignite the fuse that is my sanity. Every night it's all the same. Days keep turning into years. Your words burn just like a flame. You blink and I disappear. Voices in the night, obscured by ambiguity. Am I wrapped within this dream? Beneath the weight of memory. Every night it's all the same. Days keep turning into years. Your words burn just like a flame. Toes to the celestial beat. We look to the sky. We look to our feet. Tapping our toes to the celestial beat. Tap them! Strolling over the waves.
not a care in the world. We smile a smile and just dance to the music. Look how this world is moving.